We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, 6 straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, Friday Fives. Scott, did anything newsworthy happen in Yankees land this week? Did anyone do something that you're not allowed to say on Twitter, or else they will jump down your throat and call you a jinx? Anything like that happen this week?
Yeah, a few things happened, actually. If you count Madison Baumgartner, I think it's, what, the seventh of the season? So we're in May. Corey Kluber, I'm not going to discredit like some people are trying to. I don't think anybody in Yankee world is trying to discredit this, but Corey Kluber threw a fucking gem, a absolutely beautiful game that ended up being a no-hitter. It was something to watch. I got to tell you, it looked like vintage Corey Kluber, the guy that I can tell you I never thought I was going to see again. I certainly thought the ceiling of Corey Kluber could be a very good pitcher. Did not think that he could get back to the type of level that he got to last night. And some people, if you listen to some people that know what they're talking about, specifically David Cone and the numbers that he was looking at, he said spin rate, all of the numbers were at Corey Kluber's peak. He saw last night. He saw last night during that no-hitter, peak Corey Kluber. That's where we are.
Can't it be both? That Corey Kluber was excellent, and that you can't discredit how good he was on Wednesday against the Rangers. And also, it's just not that rare to throw a no-hitter in today's baseball, because it's not. Like, both of those can
be. But it's rare for a Yankee to throw a no-hitter. We haven't seen one in a very, very long time. So that's where I think for Yankee fans, everybody else has been doing it and we're kind of numb to that. But it just hasn't happened here. Hasn't happened here since what? David Cone. So.
Right.
So, I mean, that's
Mike Mussina,
a long time.
Mike Mussina was one out away in 2001 against Carl Everett. I'll never forget that. That was one of the more painful Yankees moments of my lifetime.
Just that was 20 years ago.
Hate Carl Everett so much. Oh yeah, and I remember Chin Ming Wong, I think, lost one in like the eighth inning in like the mid-2000s or something. Yeah, I mean, listen, but see, I think I'm in both camps. Like all that stuff you said about Corey Kluber is true. Early in that game, his slider was unhittable and he looked fantastic. And he has looked very good over the past month of baseball. Also, there's been 7 no-hitters so far and we're not even through May. Okay, like both of those things are true. And let's just accept it. Just accept it. Doesn't mean his no-hitter doesn't count. It still counts, unlike Madison Bumgarner's. But it's just never been easier to toss a no-no in Major League Baseball history. Why? Go listen to the Eno Saris pod if you're wondering why.
Yeah, I just, when I'm looking at what he did the other night and I see... Yeah, I think you have to look at all of these in a vacuum. That's the way I kind of approach it. I think there's certainly some guys that you can get a little lucky and throw on. It's a lot of luck, but Corey Kluber was not lucky. He did not
He got a little lucky in the 8th and 9th inning.
Some hard hit balls.
In the 8th and 9th inning.
I don't mean in that way, like funny bounces or just like lucky that there were a lot of hard hit balls. There weren't. He had nasty stuff all day. And when you saw the way that they mixed it up, the way that they were approaching the game plan, the way that they were really making guys look silly and feel silly at the plate, you could tell that there was something special going on that night. And, you know, when the last inning came, definitely I got some butterflies, not going to lie, feeling a little nervous for the dudes in the field, feeling a little nervous for the guys that are involved and just making sure that they execute. And it was fun to watch. I actually really enjoyed watching it, and I felt the buzz because we just haven't seen it as Yankee fans in such a long time.
The Gio play at third in the 8th inning, and then Tyler Wade's play in right field. Not that it was like that difficult of a play, but he's a shortstop playing right field because Ryan Lamar pulled his hamstring. So like, yeah, it was a nice play. I thought that was
a lot of ground
sure.
Too.
I thought for sure that was a double down the right field line off the bat. So,
he covered a lot of ground. I mean, that's the thing I don't know how many guys are getting to that ball besides Tyler Wade and a handful of others, maybe Gardy.
Judge catches that ball.
Possibly because he just reaches from where he stands. He
takes 4 steps and he's there. But yeah, I mean, so do you think that, because no hitters can be fluky, like you just said, like I believe AJ Burnett walked like 7 or 8 guys one time and got
Andy Hawkins lost a no hitter for the Yankees.
So it's just like there's random things in a no hitter, but I would still hold perfect games because we haven't seen perfect games.
Well, much. Of course, perfect games are higher when you look at what happened
in today's game specifically, when you look at Corey Kluber's
in a vacuum, he was one walk away from a perfect game. Like look
I
at
know.
It that way.
That, I know that.
That shows you the kind of day that he had and the kind of you know sync that he had with Higgy as well. So. It was from the first pitch to the last pitch. It was fun to watch him throw last night. You could tell that there was something different in the way that he was throwing, and it was fun to watch because he was in control the entire time.
The argument for why no hitters are still very impressive, despite the fact that you've got pitchers with next level stuff right now, is that they're throwing a lot of pitches and they're not allowed to go deep in games. That's why Kluber's 9-inning, 101 pitch performance was like extra rare because it was almost a Maddox. A Greg Maddox, if you don't know, is a complete game shutout under 100 pitches.
Yeah, he was efficient. That was one of the things that when you listen to Cone, I was listening to the Yes broadcast or Yes post game stuff, and Jack Curry was talking to David Cone, and I could listen to Cone talk about pitching forever. I tweeted that this dude is like, he romanticizes it when he talks about it. He's just got like this glow about him when he talks about it. And he's so intricate in the details. It's just fun to listen to, but you know, he's talking about how the different pitch mix and just how you could tell that he was in control. It was fun. And Cone loved every second. I was very surprised when I heard spin rates of the breaking pitches or in the same area, right in that same window of peak Cy Young Corey Kluber. Like,
well, pitchers have the technology and the ways to
they can specialize that much more
to get to where they were. Before we move on to number two,
I think Kluber made history, not just throwing the no-hitter, but doing it on his bobblehead night on the road. I don't know that that's ever happened in Major League Baseball history before. And the reason this happened is because the Rangers had all these Kluber bobbleheads made last year, except he got hurt in his first inning of work. So they never had a chance to use the Kluber bobbleheads. They see the Yankees coming to town, Kluber on the schedule. Oh, this is a chance to get rid of some inventory. Boom, what does Kluber do? I'm going to throw a no-hitter right in your stupid faces.
So last year, 2020, Corey Kluber throws one inning, gives up one walk, gives up zero hits as a member in the sole inning as a Texas Ranger, and then comes back into Arlington on his bobblehead night, also walks one, gives up zero hits across nine innings. It's like, that's a big FU to the team that signed you or traded for you.
$20 million contract
from Cleveland, got nothing for it. Nothing. Went to the Yankees on a bargain deal and comes back and no hits you on his freaking bobblehead night. No self-respect. I mean, you literally just, you write those off.
They didn't see that coming, right? They didn't see this coming. It's like the person in charge of getting rid of that inventory in the seventh inning last night must have been like, oh crap, what did we do? Why did we do this? All right, number two, Higgy. Our guy Higgy is getting a ton of credit for Corey Kluber's no-hitter. After the game, Kluber said he was unreal back there. The way he goes about calling the game, the way he sees things, it kind of makes sense to each other. He was on it. He just had a real good feel of what they were trying to do and called a great game. So Higgy, at a certain point, the staunchest Gary Sanchez defenders have to just throw up their hands and be like, so many pitchers can have so much success and talk so glowingly about Kyle Higashioka and his game calling before you're just like, all right, I guess so. Like, what do you do at this point?
You know, when Kluber was talking about him, and again, I'll go back to this Cone conversation that he was having, there's such a clear rapport, and Kluber was praising him in the postgame, talking about the dedication, the game planning. I think Meredith asked him about, you know, what was it like in between the innings when you were in the dugout? Were guys avoiding you? Or he said, for the most part, it was relatively the same. Higgy was still going up and talking to him. He's consistently communicating about what's happening, what's going on in the game. He does a ton of prep work for the game. Cone talking about the fact that, you know, they had a game plan, or at one point they made an adjustment. Slider was on point. He was locating his pitches. They brought in a changeup, you know, sixth inning, which gave them another look now. Now, not only is he on with his slider, his fastball, he's locating his pitches, but now he's adding another mix that they just haven't seen the first two times through the order, or the first time through the order. And now you have another thing to think about and just throw them that much off their toes. I don't know who made that call. I don't know if that was Kluber, if that was part of a game plan, if certain things happened, or if that's Higgy saying, look, we have this, you're on right now, let's throw it, let's see how it feels. And if it's good, let's mix it up even more and keep them, keep their weight on the back of their heels. And it worked. He has a good feel for the game. There's no doubt about it. When you see Gerrit Cole and Corey Kluber going to him as their preferred catcher of the ball, receiver of their pitches, battery mate. By the way, the battery shower in shopping carts, that's an all-time classic. Them spraying, that for me, the battery shower in shopping carts.
Wait, you mean way like, better. Like a towel cart?
Yeah, they look like they're in shopping carts.
Bro. Yeah, yeah.
They look like they're about to go on like Jackass style, like running, you know, going through the, like about to hit a curb. But they're getting showered while in these baskets. It's hilarious.
Is Higgy drinking a Coca-Cola? Is that a,
I have
is
no
that a
idea. They're getting doused in, by something. They're getting doused by beer and whatever else was, you know, available to get doused in. But
they
were having fun.
Can that type of game calling be taught?
Can it be taught?
Can it be taught and coached into a catcher? Or is that something that you need to just have intuition and game feel for?
I certainly think you can get coached. You get coached to a point where you have a certain amount of knowledge. And I think it's going to take a lot of back end development, like research, making sure that you are you know the game plan, you know the people, you know the batters.
But it's not Higgy doing the research. Higgy is receiving the information.
He's part of it. He's
digesting the information, obviously. He's studying.
It's not like he's the only one. Like, they're just giving him the information. He's like, thank you for information. I will compute now. I'm sure he's doing his own research and like disseminating it in a way. Are you kidding me? He's a scholar. Look at him. The way that he talks with
you think he's going on like
those guys go out on their own.
You think he's going on like Baseball Savant looking at tendencies and stuff?
Yes.
I highly doubt
I
it. They have a team of nerds that are sending him spreadsheets with this information.
He has all of that, but he's going out and doing his own thing. He's doing what he guys has to do. He's doing whatever it takes.
I think there's
parts of it. I think that, yes, you have to be well-prepared, well-studied, understand like all angles of the game and be able to absorb that and be able to retain it and then be able to click it back in your mind. Like, I don't think a lot of people can do that. Like, that's not something that a lot of people could just like remember, a whole bunch of information and then be able to access it in a very short period of time. That's a skill. And I think that can be learned, but that's also like just a something that's innately different in different people. That said, like, I think intuition and feeling and understanding of like the way that the baseball is a part of it. There's no doubt. There's a feel for the game.
Yeah, I'd say maybe it's like 80% coachable, but then you have to have that extra 20%, which could take a game calling to the next level.
You can get coached all day long. If you can't execute what's being taught to you, then that's the problem. And executing it can happen in very different ways, right?
Right. This isn't executing a new mechanic of like a swing or a throw or anything like that. This is executing a feel and a game plan at the right time, which is, that's why it's coachable. But at the same time, if you don't have that feel and that innate ability to implement it at the right time, all the coaching in the world isn't going to really solve that issue. And we've seen players over time that seem to have, in various sports and in various aspects of the game, have that next level innate ability to impact a game and others not. And I think that's a real thing in sports. And I think that's a thing that like these data nerds will say doesn't exist. But me watching baseball for years and years, I know that exists. I see it.
Right.
I see it.
Yeah.
Like, it exists.
That's it. That's where the numbers and nothing else people completely lose me. You're missing a great sport. You're missing a great game because there are intangibles that happen and matter. You're missing a great game.
Otherwise, you're watching a computer program, and who the hell wants to do that? There needs to be some human element and unpredictability, or else it's no longer entertainment.
Correct.
So yeah. Okay, the number three thing, and I guess we entered Bizarro World on Monday night because Gerrit Cole got hit hard for the first time all year. And I'm not just talking about giving up runs. Like, literally, he got hit hard. In the first two innings alone, he gave up 7 balls hit over 95 miles an hour, which is crazy for Gerrit Cole. He allowed 5 earned runs on Monday. His ERA jumped to 2.03. In his previous 4 starts combined, before that start, 28 innings, he had only allowed 3 earned runs. So whatever the Rangers saw or whatever he was not able to execute, it was by far his worst start of the season. Maybe his worst start as a Yankee, because he got bombed, like no two ways about it.
Yeah. And, you know, listening to his post game, you find out a lot of information because he's very honest in the post game and tells you pretty much what happened. And he was talking about, you know, he would execute one pitch, but then not execute the follow-up pitch. And he was, you know, leaving it over the plate. And normally he's executing the bingo bongo, you know, making sure that you hit him with one, you smack him with the other and put him to sleep.
The jab and
he
the
just
hook.
Wasn't executing fully, yeah, on the game plan there and was leaving pitches over the plate. Just said he didn't, just one of those nights, wasn't able to feel it. And that's when we look around and we're like, okay, all right, you're allowed one.
You know, the
nobody gave him shit. Like,
no.
good for Yankees Twitter for being reasonable and not saying anything about it. Because guess what? He's been so good, you can't get on a guy.
I got chirped by some Mets fans that I know that Jacob DeGrom would never. But otherwise, I didn't get chirped. It just goes to show you, like, I think I saw a stat because like Gerrit Cole's season had been like 1999 Pedro-like up until that season, except Pedro did what he did for 6 straight months. So it just goes to show you how like insanely hard it is as a starting pitcher to never have a bad start. And this was just a bad start for Gerrit Cole. I expect him to go out the next time out and be seven shutout innings or something.
Yeah, he's easy to get pissed off. Like the thing about Gerrit Cole, what's different is that there's two things now. He was hit hard this week, and then he watched Corey Kluber throw a no-hitter. That's two motivators for Gerrit Cole to walk out there and try to do better. He's going to try to pitch a perfect game, and he's going to make sure that his next start is damn good.
So we have to hope.
I think he gets fueled by that shit, that like internal competition.
So we have to hope that like mid-September, he just has a meltdown start, and then that just like reinvigorates him to just go on an epic run into October. For the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. A pissed off Gerrit Cole going into the playoffs would be a very good thing.
What's the fourth?
All right. Next one is Yankees are, look, we're talking about the pitching. We'll continue to talk about the pitching because it's been such a strong suit. But number four is the Yankees lead MLB in double plays grounded into 48 double plays that the Yankees have grounded into. And when you're not hitting the ball well and you're not productive, and oh, by the way, you're also grounding into double plays, that's a killer. That's a killer because any kind of momentum you have that you need to take advantage of, you're kind of running yourself out of that inning, unfortunately. That's another thing they're doing is they're actually running themselves out of innings on the base path too. But this is the double plays. Yeah, and it's weird. You know, we talked about at one point Gary Sanchez and you know, the amount of ground balls that he's hitting, not getting the ball up in the air. I remember we talked about that like, I don't know, a few weeks ago. That's one of the problems that we're seeing is like the ground balls are happening even more often with guys that are, you know, for the most part, you look at their numbers and they're elevating the ball. They're traditionally elevating the ball and their launch angle is in a good place and they're trying to hit home runs. Way more ground balls today.
And that's over a double play grounded into per game. So every night you can bank on the Yankees grounding into at least one double play. And with how hard it is to score runners right now in baseball, because you just can't string together hits. That's why, what was it? It was a Tuesday night. I forget what inning it was, but the Yankees had like five hits in the inning. I was like, oh my God, yeah. Have we been transported back to 2005? Like, what is going on
base
right
hit,
now?
Base hit, yeah. Double, base hit. I was like, this is amazing.
This
They're
is awesome.
The bases. There, everybody's running and they just keep running and this is exciting and there's outfielders trying to make plays. Wow. It was just like baseball, baby.
Yeah. So over a double play per night, which is terrible. The Yankees offense continues to be below league average. Their WRC plus is exactly league average at 100 and they are scoring less than the major league runs per game. Major league average runs per game is 4.35. They've averaged 4.02 runs per game. So below league average offense when it comes down to it. Okay, the last thing that we should talk about from this week, number five, some injury news and roster updates. Giancarlo did not just need a weekend off. He's going on the IL. Boone was asked about
retroactive to the date. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Boone was asked about Stanton's continuing injury problems, and he said, I don't have that answer. He obviously is in very good shape. He works hard. He takes care of himself. He has had over the years, these things pop up. In his case, we try to take things more conservatively because of that history. Maybe that's reading between the lines. Load management. Go listen to the episode with Simon Brundish. I know I plugged that last week, but it really is worth a listen with all the Yankees injuries and how they handle some of these guys. That's why we probably saw Gio and Judge get a day off on Thursday. A little getaway day action, even though they both had the pinch hit. Judge's first pinch hit as a baseball player, by the way. So Stanton left
as a major leaguer, as a baseball player. I guess he's never pinch hitting.
Probably never pinch hitting. He's always starting. Yeah. So the Stanton thing. Yeah. I mean, it's Boone even said it's just one of those things with Stanton.
It's hard to explain. It really is, especially when you see the guy and just the way he looks. You know, this is part of that load management potentially. Also, they're looking at the you know, he's sidelined with a strain. They have the ability to go retroactive on the IL, only 10 days. Why not do it at this point, right? Like, why not do it? Got another guy up. We're going to rest him anyway. It feels like it was one of those moves. One of those like, okay, let's just rest him for a few more days here.
Fine. You know, comes back in 7 days, you know, 10 days later and he's ready to go, great. But you know how these things go with Stanton. His quad is now a calf. His calf is now a bicep. His bicep is now a shoulder. He's now
magically they happen when he's on the IL too.
his abdominal muscles are strained, and it's like we'll see you August 20th. It's like, okay, how did that happen?
So, he's out. Odor was recalled, then sent to paternity leave, then sent back. So he's back now. That's where we are.
Do you know if his wife...
Lamar is now out because he strained another strain and Tyler Wade had to go and play right field. So playing a little bit of musical chairs here with outfielders. And
do we know if Odor's wife had the baby in Texas, in Arlington? Because obviously that's where he probably had a house or had a home.
I don't know that information. That would make sense though, because he was back pretty quick.
Yeah, he was back super fast. He played on Thursday. So it's like he went home. Oh, great. Baby, thanks. See you tomorrow. Got to get back to the park.
Kiss the baby. Go kiss the baby.
But yeah, everyone. And he was reactivated from the IL. Everyone loved to see Rugie back. And he went on a little mini revenge tour like Corey Kluber in Texas.
Gary Sanchez kind of gave everybody a scare, depending on who you're asking, I guess. On Tuesday night, left the game. Nobody really knew why. He ran as fast as he possibly could around the bases from second to third and scored. I got to give him credit. He was hustling his ass off. I don't think I've ever seen Gary Sanchez run as fast as he did. So it does not surprise me that he cramped up.
He legged out an infield single on opening day. And I think that was the fastest I've ever seen him run.
I don't know.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft. And his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Man, that stride was a little bit extra the other night, and he was flying. He was he had a hell of a lot of momentum behind that ass, just going. And he couldn't stop at some point and ended up cramping. So
could you beat Gary Sanchez in a foot race to first base?
Come on. Are you serious?
I mean, you're an old man now.
Yes, of course I could beat Gary Sanchez in a foot race.
He's a professional athlete.
That does not matter.
Well, you one time ludicrously said you could beat A-Rod in a foot race.
No, I said I could go first to third faster than A-Rod, and I still believe that.
That's beating him in a foot race.
It's running the bases. He runs like a freaking, like he hops and he like
Alex Rodriguez like was a world-class athlete.
We were not, I'm not talking about Alex Rodriguez in his prime. We said that in a, whatever year
it
that
was. It was 2015. It was 2015.
Yes, and I could have beat him in 2015
I
in a
don't
race.
Think you could have. I don't think you could beat Alex Rodriguez right now today. Let's go out in the backyard.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? We've all gone through a lot over the past year plus with COVID. Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area, and it's available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily to see for yourself. Visit BetterHelp.com/Bronx21. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. We have a great special offer for our listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Bronx21. One more time, BetterHelp.com/Bronx21.
Give me the opportunity. Give me the opportunity because I will smoke him. The Gleyber Torres also activated on Wednesday and he's back from the COVID list, which is great news. He was able to come back for that Corey Kluber. Good timing on that. All right, let's looking ahead. We got a big series in the Bronx this weekend against the Chicago White Sox, who are coming in with some news.
Yeah, so somehow through all this, the White Sox have the best record in the American League. But Tony La Russa, who was just an odd hire to begin with for a young team with you know, eyeing growth, you bring in ancient Tony La Russa, who's got DUI problems and everything. Like, the dude's falling asleep in the dugout. The managerial hire made no sense to begin with. But with what happened the other night, so Yermin Mercedes hit a ninth inning bomb on a 3-0 pitch off Twins infielder Willens Astudillo. How do you say that? I don't know.
But I was excited for you to say it. It's a position player.
I think that matters. So position player pitching. Mercedes hits a bomb on a 3-0 pitch. La Russa blasted Mercedes after the game, saying he gave him the take sign. And that's not something you do. The unwritten rules of baseball. Like, this happened last year with Fernando Tatis Jr. hitting a grand slam late in a blowout game. And I believe it was also on a 3-0 pitch. And his manager also talked about unwritten rules and giving him a take sign. And these guys are just ignoring take signs. I'm going to get mine, Blake Snell style. And if I'm going to get a meatball pitch down the middle, I'm going to hit the thing to the freaking moon. And no manager is going to tell me otherwise. You can look at this one of two ways. It was exciting. I mean, you get a meatball, you do damage. Like, game's not over. Like, this is the pros. This is the big leagues. This is not little league. There's no mercy rule. Or he ignored his manager. And I feel like those are two separate things that I think can be talked about in this instance.
So you're trying to isolate them to talk about the fact that someone is ruling the club, and that's a particular reason why. Okay, first of all, If this happens, let's say this happens, La Russa is wrong in the way that he's coming out and talking about it and going against his guy. So the way that you're saying, if he goes against it, we should never know that. We should never know that. So that's why I'm going to completely not talk about that and dismiss that point.
But you can't dismiss it.
Because we should never know about it. No, we should never know about it.
This, but Mercedes didn't deny he got the sign. He ignored the sign.
I understand that. You want to go old school? Don't talk about that shit in public, Tony. How about that? How about you get your guys back, deal with it in the dugout? If that's something, then that's fine. That's your business. That's your team's business. They have a position player out there throwing meatballs. F you, Rocco Baldelli. If you come in with a position player, which I don't like, I think is dumb, the batter should have every ability to smoke a ball, because you just said it. This is a professional sport. These are professional athletes. But what you're doing is making a mockery of the game by bringing someone in to throw it. It's fun in times. Okay, how about we don't have a problem with any of it then? If a guy's throwing and he sees a ball that's a meatball coming in 65 miles an hour, he's going to tee off on it, and he should.
No, I have no problem with him swinging.
There's no unwritten rule for position players pitching either, by the way.
The stupid thing is that he's going to get the same meatball pitch on 3-1 as he is 3-0. So it's really just like, it's just asinine. Like, this stupid respect thing. Like, shut up. No, the unwritten rule.
Did you see
CC
talking about it on R2C2? I retweeted it out. CC went off on it. Just like, no feel for the game. You're out of touch. Just went off. It absolutely.
Well, that's what
rant.
I want to talk about with La Russa, because then he obviously called out Mercedes after the game, and then Lance Lynn, another player on his team, said there are no
like
rules.
Hot dog
Lance Lynn, who's having another great season. There are no rules. The more I play this game, the more those unwritten rules have gone away. Lance Lynn is correct. Yeah. And then Tony La Russa doubles down. Lance has a locker. I have an office. I don't agree. Again, out of touch with his players. I don't know how he got this job or why he got this job. I don't know how the White Sox are winning with that manager. I guess that goes to show you how much does the manager really matter if the players are good and the players are engaged with each other.
They have a ton of young talent that's just really good.
They can still go and play good baseball despite what your manager does. I have an issue. The only thing I have an issue with here is that Mercedes did ignore his manager. I agree it was a stupid take sign. Don't give him the take sign. But you kind of have to abide by your manager.
How many times do you think a guy misses a sign in a game that we never in a million years hear about? It probably happens.
He didn't
three
miss
to
the
four
sign,
times
though.
A game.
He didn't miss the sign. He ignored
doesn't
the sign.
Listen to the sign. Fine, but I'm my point is that how many guys are running through stop signs? Something that happens all the time. Why?
Well,
why
you
are
don't
you
want a guy
a
pulling up and pulling a hammy.
Get have your players back, understand the situation. There was a lack of feel for the situation, a lack of feel for what the game is today, a lack of feel for what fans want to see, a lack of feel for everything. I saw someone tweet out, I don't remember who it was, might have been, I forget who it was, but it was one of the Barstool guys, I think. such a well-timed joke. Terrible joke, though, because the guy was, you should never drink and drive. Not the first time he mishandled a Mercedes.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, big burn. The fact is like, you have no touch. You have no touch, no feel for the game at all.
Can I pose a scenario to you? Okay. Instead of the situation that we had with the take sign, Mercedes is up there and he gets the bunt sign because it's a tie game in the ninth inning and there's a runner on second base. And he ignores the bunt sign to move the runner over because he wants to swing away and gets mine. Do you agree with
Willie Mays Hayes,
baby?
Willie Mays Hayes.
Do you agree with that?
No, again, I don't. The thing is that unless it's picked up by somebody else, like those things, the old school mentality that I'm thinking is you handle that shit inside. You handle that behind closed doors. You don't go out to the podium and start talking about it.
You would have an issue with Mercedes ignoring a bunt sign.
Yes, if I'm a manager, I have an issue with any of my players ignoring my signs. Of course I do. There's no.
But you don't seem to have an issue with him ignoring the take sign.
No, you're missing the entire point here. If I'm the manager, I have an issue with you missing my sign.
No, I'm talking you, Scott, as the baseball fan.
Scott is the baseball fan. Keep that shit inside. Don't talk about it. Have your players back out in public. That's what I think you should do.
So even though I don't agree, I wouldn't have, if I was the manager, I wouldn't give a take sign on 3-0 in that scenario. I would give take signs in certain situations if a pitcher is
I would probably be giving zero signs. I would be grabbing the crotch, spitting.
For all we know, Tony La Russa actually doesn't run the team and he sends a sign to the third base coach and then the third base coach just totally ignores him. And so that's where the sign stops at the third base coach, for all we know. But I have an issue if players do start ignoring the manager, even though I think Tony La Russa should not be in baseball anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there's something larger there if all the players are just continuously not listening to the manager. You got other issues going on with your team, pal. There's something happening in that point. All right, number two, kind of along the same ilk, we got the White Sox coming in, and yes, they're scoring off of position players, but they're scoring off of everybody. They have the highest run differential in the major leagues, plus 73. Yankees, for context, are at plus 15. Houston plus 63, and then the rest of the leaders are in the NL West. Giants, Padres, Dodgers plus 57, 51, and 60. So these guys are scoring a lot of runs, and this is going to be a very good test for the Yankees pitchers going into the weekend at home. So the Yankees offense, I think, you know, we talked about them grounding into double plays. I think this weekend against this particular opponent, they're going to have to capitalize on their opportunities at the plate because the White Sox seemingly will score runs.
Yeah. They have one of the best offenses in the game. This is without Jimenez, who injured himself before the season. So it's a big series, tough stretch that the Yankees are on. Cause then not too long down the road, they have Boston. So this is, they're in a hard part of their schedule right now. The number three thing is the outfield. And I know we talked about it last week with the Hicks injury, but do the Yankees need to target an outfielder and should they trade for one sooner than later? The New York Post wrote an article with 8 potential trade options for the Yankees. I'll run through them quickly. Ketel Marte, Byron Buxton, Brian Reynolds, Starling Marte, Mike Yastrzemski, Jackie Bradley Jr. or Lorenzo Cain, and Ender Inciarte. Some of these I don't think make any sense for multiple reasons. Like, why the hell would the Twins trade Byron Buxton? He's finally having a breakout season.
Why are the San Francisco Giants? Do they have the best record in baseball right now? They might.
Why would the Giants trade Yastrzemski? Can we just get Talkman back? Like what's going on with that trade there? But it's an interesting discussion if the Yankees will actually go out and acquire a major league outfielder, or promote from within, or just try and get by with depth, like these Ryan Lamars, or when will we see Esteban Florial, like you talked on yesterday's pod with Matt Cardos.
So I think they're clearly going to, you know, try to do as much as they can before the deadline try to see this thing through. Obviously, what the easy thing to think about here is Hicks does not need surgery and is able to come back and play well through it. Clint Frazier takes his head out of his ass and figures it out and starts playing to his ability. But all, you know, these things have to happen. They have right now, they have a hole in center field and in left field. So that's a problem, which leads me to believe that, yeah, probably one of these two things is not going to happen. And they're going to have to go out into the market and find someone that's going to fit this team. And to be honest, when we're looking at what's going on with, you know, some guys that are potentially available, you look at some of this list that the Post put out, a lot of it's trash. But I think this is also an opportunity now to go out and do what you could have done in the offseason, or, you know, and take care of a problem. You mentioned those guys. My guy that I'm really hoping they target, because I think this is actually a very real possibility here, is David Peralta. Left fielder, Arizona Diamondbacks. They're not doing anything. They signed him 3 years. I think it was $21 million. He's got $7.5 million on the next 2 years, controlled through 2023 as a free agent year. Peralta fits this team so freaking well. Left fielder, lefty bat, doesn't strike out a lot, hits for average, has power, plays good defense. Like, this is a guy that actually fits this team and makes this lineup like that much more more flexible and just, you know, dynamic, because this is a real bat from the left side, and is filling a need. And if Clint Frazier can't come back and play like that, he's got to figure it out. He's got to improve sooner than later. The All-Star break is going to be upon us. The trade deadline is going to be upon us before we know it. And this is going to be a real thing, looking at what's happening in left field, and what Clint Frazier is doing, and then who's on the market. And Peralta, Diamondbacks, Yankees, Diamondbacks have a history of trading. Wouldn't be surprised if that was a move that was made.
Yeah, and I don't know that this would require much in the way of prospects, because, like you said, this would kind of be like a salary dump for the Diamondbacks. They'd probably want a couple players in return, but nothing. We're not talking about anything major.
Nothing crazy, but he is a player that could be a dynamic player in this team and really fit well in the lineup. And again, controlled for 2 years. I like it a lot.
Clint Frazier sucking this year is just such a problem. It's such a freaking problem for this team.
Yeah.
Really, really.
It gives Cashman an opportunity to fix this, though. And yeah, for 2 years. It's actually a pretty glaring opportunity right now.
The number four.
I'm going to be mad if they don't do it.
The number four thing is the Yankees rotation and the stability that we have seen for over a month now. Obviously, we have Gerrit Cole leading the rotation despite his bad start. But Kluber and Herman have just been churning out solid start after solid start. Taillon's been the inconsistent one, and Montgomery has been inconsistent, but I think less bad than Taillon overall. But really, when you look at it, it's been Cole, Kluber, and Herman for a month straight of good starts.
I mean, you look back at Herman's last six starts. I think the last flub we saw in there was against Houston, and it was still, he threw five innings, gave up three runs.
That wasn't a flub.
That was a couple home runs.
But that's going up against one of the best offenses in baseball.
Sure, exactly. So you see that, but that's the only one of the, you know, of the six that you're looking at that stands out as not as good as the rest. He's throwing innings. He's getting deeper into games. Again, this is a Yankees commitment to the starting pitching, going deep in games. I laugh, but I love it. It's great. It's a good thing.
Isn't it so freaking nice to not look in the fourth inning with one out and be like, double barrel action going in the Yankees bullpen?
Dude, this is exactly why I wanted to move on from Tanaka. Nothing against Tanaka, but we knew what was going to happen if Tanaka was here. He was going to go five innings. That's Max. It. Maybe he'll Max. Get into a sixth if he's lucky. But
no, dude is like, getting gassed after 70 pitches last
year. Keep doing the same thing over and over again. We know what we're expecting. At least we got some new shit, new toys to see what's up and like test the tread, you know, on some new guys. And Corey Kluber apparently has a lot of tread left on those tires.
Yeah, so, but the Domingo Herman thing is very interesting, because I remember when he got optioned to alternate site, I asked you the question,
yeah,
do you think we'll ever see Domingo Herman again? And you said, I don't know. And I think that was the right answer at the time, because of all the stuff that went on with him over the past year and a half, and the fact that you're not going to get many chances when you have off-field issues and you're not performing on the mound. Like, why is a team going to keep giving you chances? They brought him back, and he has not had a hiccup since. And now I feel like he's pitched good for long enough where if he does have a hiccup,
he's here. Well, then he's here.
Then no, this is what I'm saying. if he has a hiccup, if he goes out and gets knocked out in the third inning next start, he's not getting optioned back. He's in the rotation now.
You know, when we looked at the opportunity that the Yankees had going into the season, I think we identified it as this is something that they have is a luxury because of the minor league guys that are major league ready or damn close to it with Davey Garcia and, you know, unfortunately Clark Schmidt had the injury. But
Garcia's but that, not but that the was a reason have been chiming for because the rotation's been good. Like
exactly. It was a luxury. It was a luxury. Whereas that has not been the case in a long time. You know, that's why I was pining to go out and get a big guy, a Trevor Bauer type. And apparently they did do that with Corey Kluber because he's acting very much like a number two right now.
Chill. But Devi Garcia, a month ago, it was all Yankee. Every time someone other than Gerrit Cole was pitching, it's why are we watching this guy pitch instead of Devi Garcia? Now, that hasn't been the tune for a month.
Well, that's what happens when you have some stability. And also, I'll say this, like when you have Herman, Kluber, and Cole just kind of locking down the top three, the other two guys have more time now, more of a rope to figure it out. If those are the guys that they want to, you know, to be able to figure it out, now they have the rope to do that because there's not a stress on them, one, to go deep in games, or two, just to perform and for the Yankees to get a win because everybody else is doing well. When you have solid starting pitching, it just makes everything so much easier. And Severino's around the corner.
So Taillon got hit hard again, even though the Yankees won the game against Texas. How many more starts do you think they'll give him before they see, maybe send him down to the minors to work on something or skip a start or something like that?
I think they're committed to him. I think
still be committed to him. They could skip a start and still be committed to him.
Yeah, what does skipping a start do? I don't know what that does. That doesn't, I mean, I could argue that maybe not doesn't do anything with him because he's trying to get back in, you know, into a routine and make sure that he's in a rhythm of every 5 days. Who knows?
I mean, he's got a 5.70 ERA.
But that's the point. Like because of what Kluber and Cole and Herman are doing, they can wait. They have patience. They can be more patient with these guys, understanding that Severino is going to force the hand for somebody, you know, whenever he's back, he's going to force a hand and there will be a move at that point. I don't know if they're forced into making a move before that.
Yeah. Okay. The last thing isn't necessarily something to look forward to this weekend, but the news just happened and you can look forward to it over the next however many months. Derek Jeter is getting an ESPN Films multi-part documentary series called The Captain. The little synopsis is, as he prepares to enter Cooperstown this July, he is pulling back the curtain to reveal what it's really like to be the captain, featuring Derek Jeter. I expect this to be very similar to the thing he did with HBO leading up to his 3,000th hit.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think it'll be good. It's the same guys as The Last Dance, right? So our producers, I think, are the people. I know that there's a different director.
There's a Tom Brady one coming out this November.
Yeah, no one's going to watch that. Why would anybody watch that? But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun to go down memory lane. There's no doubt. Give me Derek Jeter content all day long and I'll watch it.
But do you think... one of the reasons The Last Dance was so good is because Jordan obviously is not afraid to still like talk shit currently. But Jeter's not that guy. So how interesting... It's going to be interesting to me and you and Yankees fans... But how interesting is this going to be to non-Yankees fans?
I think it'll probably make people throw up a little bit because of the touted success and the just what happened during his playing career, because he did have so much success. And for anybody else that was not a Yankee fan, you know, looking at that era, it was all Yankees. It was Yankee dominated pretty much his entire career. So I don't care about that personally. You know, I will enjoy watching all of the moments that they highlight and all of the different interactions. And I hope that they show something a little bit different. So I think it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. I like the way that they did the Last Dance. ESPN does a good job with their documentaries. I think this one's going to be good.
Do you think we'll get a gift basket episode?
I hope so. it would be terrific.
Highly probably doubtful.
Probably not.
All right. Thank you for joining us this episode for Friday Fives. Make sure to go check out Scott's interview with Matt Cardos on Esteban Florial and his opportunity with what the Yankees have going on in the outfield right now. We will talk to you on Monday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.